Now we, all of us, have the best representatives of the intellectual elite of these civilizations are discussing this new world order. Thank you. And I would like to give the floor to the famous muse of the Russian Minister of Foreign Affairs. It is Mrs. Maria Zakharova, who symbolizes the beauty and delicacy of the great Russian national culture. Thank you very much. Nobody has ever called me like this, but I do appreciate this introduction. Thank you very much. I will stick to my text because my time is limited. I do not want to move away from the key subject matter of this discussion. For a couple of times, I will refer to some of the products of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of the Russian Federation. The thing is that my father sometimes says that the time schedule can, oh, that advertising can only work when the product that is being advertised is really good. But if it is bad, then you can't promote it. And I should say that everything that was laid down at a theoretical and practical level, everything that is called by somebody as a trendy thing or as something else, has been described by Russian diplomats, not only diplomats, but many others, and Pyotr Shcherbakov, who has shaped this system, has heard some attempts to make fun of his approach, but what has come as a result of the unification of first BRIC countries and then BRICS countries means that after the early 1990s, when this country was fully dependent on the traditional Western basic principles, which did not work anymore, and that is why I can promote our ministry. I will start with the foreign policy of Russia that was adopted in 2023. It is quite a unique policy. I would call it a philosophic declaration. I mean the fact that it is a kind of manifesto. It is based on philosophic communities to become a kind of manifestation. This document, with your permission, I would say that it is a diplomatic document or anti-diplomatic document. Because there are opportunities to criticize it. The concept of the foreign policy of Russia developed in 2023 sharpens all the attitudes that existed, moving Russia towards the forefront. It is not a simple declaration. It is a program of fighting for a future transformation of the world. Now we are developing this approach, and in a couple of years you will see how it works. This concept includes nine principles on which the multipolar system should be based. It is multipolarity, polycentricity. I know that there are different approaches, but we're speaking about the same multilateral nature in the genuine and Western meaning of the word. Actually, the principle of equality has been recorded in the UN Declaration documents. First of all, it is the modern principle of multipolar structure of the world. Somebody may say that Article 2 of the Charter of the United Nations refers to the equality of all the members of the UN, and somebody may say that the other systems too rely on such principles, but it is not exactly so. And the thing is that these principles have not worked in full up to the moment. These are modern principles of international relations, but in reality, they are being violated on a regular basis. With your permission, I will refer to some specific facts. For instance, the collective West countries today quite officially have 17 colonies. I'm not talking now about colonialism as the underlying principle of Western philosophy. No, there are 17 colonies, and they do not, and those Western countries do not report to any authority. I am not going to list all of them. The second principle, according to the concept, is non-acceptance of hegemony in international affairs. This is a principle describing a future system of polycentricity and multipolarity. And once again, I refer to our products. At 8 p.m. on Saturday, our magazine devoted to the subject will have a program on this subject. If you look at the collective West, that is to say, the global minority, and the normal attitude for them is not multipolarity. It is exactly hegemony. Then they are not shy to admit it. They actually boast of it. They believe that it is based on their ownership of breakthrough technologies. The third principle is cooperation based on mutual interests and profits to be generated. And many of the principles about economic equality and the others do not mean what they are called. And it is a great example of what is being done in the framework of the BRICS countries, because the BRICS countries have a general system of relations without any violence that can be applied to anybody, referring to its normal nature. But today, at the beginning of the 21st century, we say that the existence of pluralism is not a normal attitude, is a norm, but an abnormality. And in the West now, they say that if you move away from this principle, you should be canceled. The fourth principle is non-interference in domestic affairs of various countries. For instance, this subject is being declared in many documents, including the United Nations. However, there are different approaches to it. Even according to the most moderate calculation, starting from the early 19th century, the United States of America only have tried to change domestic situation in many countries in at least 150 states of the globe. We have a representative of Syria attending our meeting today, who was fighting for it. It wasn't just an isolated case of aggression against Syria. It was a two-year-long attempt at occupying and invading the country and destroying its life in order simply to profit from its resources and to have one more point on the global map to be able to influence the region. I will not be talking now about Libya or Yugoslavia. You know more details than I do. But it is just that of late we have been only referring mostly to the United States and the UK, but France is no better. We're just back from our tour of Africa, and we have seen what French hegemony means for the African continent. Just imagine what kind of question was asked of Minister Sergei Lavrov when we were in Chad. A local journalist asked both ministers whether the relations between Chad and Russia may have an impact on the relations between Chad and France. And then the minister went absolutely furious. Just think what the world is like where you live. We have been enjoying many decades of friendship and cooperation. Russia does not come to us with empty hands. It comes as a good partner which helps us to improve the prosperity of our population. And the journalist who asked this question is now living using Western narratives, and when the foreign minister of Chad said that it wasn't what Chad had been fighting for and having bloodsheds, the audience, and there were lots of people there, the audience broke into an applause. And the fifth principle is the rule of law, in the rule of international law, and the absence of double standards, which is quite important today. Double standards or the absence of standards means the world order based on certain rules that the West has been imposing on the nations of the world. Where has this term come from? I would just like to remind all of you, including our internet audience.
The rule-based order. So there's been a surge of interest towards the thesis, which happened in 2023. What happened during this time? It's an intervention of the U.S. and the so-called anti-Iraqi coalition into Iraq. So they were hoping to find an excuse for doing this. There was no UN resolution. Russia vetoed, like all the other countries, and it didn't allow for Iran to be captured this way by using the international law. And that's why they needed a thesis, and this thesis appeared, that motto came around to be, and then it started growing quite successfully, quote, end of quote, and I am ironic when telling this. I'm not going to tell you more about the rules-based order, because this is a buzzword that we'll discuss. Another principle, it's the inseparability of security in global and regional aspects. What does that mean? Let me give you a specific example. For how many years the OSCE, the Organization of Security and Cooperation, functions? For 50 years. It also deals with transatlantic issues and the principles of inseparability of security. As soon as they decided to go away from that principle practically and to experiment with this, to actually separate the security and safety of the Western part of Europe and to single out the safety of Russia, not taking it into account, not taking into account its values and interests. What happened? The Ukraine happened. A whole state was put to the knife because of the Western apologema that the security can be separated. It can be ours and not ours. So the inseparability of security in Russia, I think, has a very good analogy, a very good synonym. Whatever you cry out will echo back. That's how we say. That's the saying we have. Now, there is also a seventh principle, the diversity of cultures and the diversity of cultures and going away from forcing other development models, ideologies, or values, and leaning on single secular systems and religious systems and moral orientations. I think this is one of the most important, again, according to this historical context, principles that we spoke about today, and we'll say more of that later on. And now, let me tell about the final principle. Two last principles: responsible leadership of the leading states, aimed at stable and favorable development conditions for both themselves and other nations and countries. And let me explain here what is meant by that. Responsible leadership of leading states. What do we have for now? It's not just an irresponsible leadership. It's a conscientiously propaganda of irresponsibility as a norm of existence. I'll allow myself quoting Madeleine Albright, who once said in 1998, if the US has to use the force, it's because, and you can logically suppose necessary, it's because it's important or something, or it's because it's responsible. It's because, she said, if we have to use force, it's because we are America. That's what Madeleine Albright said. We are an indispensable nation. We are, she said, stand tall, and we see further than other countries into the future. Today, this country, I mean the US, had faced a lot of existential threats around itself. And I mean those existential threats, the way I see them now, have not trampled the nation to the ground just because the founding fathers have put down a very solid foundation. They could never think what could happen with their inheritance by the liberal democrats in the 21st century, what the liberal democrats would do with that. The society is not just separated. There's a lot of hatred that is being cultivated in the society. Moreover, it serves as the basis of the American democratic process. The lack of an ideology as such, it doesn't really matter what kind of ideology, a state-based ideology, has been replaced by the drugs, by their legalization, and by other kind of drugs, and a moral void of the whole nation. They are not even in search for themselves. Previously, they were searching for themselves. Now they're not doing it anymore. Financially, should I remind you? What's the state debt of the U.S.? Should I remind you that some people cannot even utter these numbers? 30, 40, how many? 35, you say, trillion USD. But that's not the problem. They can have a bigger debt, and who doesn't have a debt? It's just that the domestic product of the U.S. is lower than the external debt, and that's not the biggest woe. Even the biggest woe is that the currency it is all denominated in is not guaranteed by real economy, is not secured by real economy. And the bubbles that we see inflating, they burst on a regular basis, leading to global crises and to other tragedies around the globe. And huge countries and regions cannot overcome them alone, and that's why the G20 had been created as a response to an American crisis that's been an American doing because of the American real estate market in 2008. Allow me to conclude my intervention reminding you of the main UN principles, reminding you on the leading role of states in the area of supporting global peace and security. That's what the UN Charter talks about and many other international documents. How can we talk about contributing to peace and security where the NATO countries, the global minority, supplies weapons. Just think about it. Just think about it. Supply weapons to a terroristic regime. And they do it. And this is the most atrocious part. They do it in an uncontrollable way. Yesterday or the day before yesterday, I saw a quote, and I don't remember which year it belongs to, a recent one. It was said by a foreign minister of one of the Middle East countries, the Persian Bay. He was speaking at an international forum, and he said, I'm going to switch to English so that you, out there, were not... He wasn't antagonistic to the Anglo-Saxon word, but he wanted to communicate his thought precisely. He said, I'm going to switch to the English language so that you could clearly hear me there in the western part of Europe, he said. Just remember and see for yourself. In a couple of years, it's the western part of Europe that will become the major supply, he said, of international terrorism. And I subscribe to these words, he said. The terrorists will use the weapons that the United States of America had been supplying to the Kiev regime. These weapons are already in the western part of Europe, and these weapons, the armaments, can be found already in the north part of Africa, in the Middle East, if the northern Africa and the Middle East, and I'm sorry to say that, unfortunately, had been suffering from international terrorism for many years, Europe had been suffering from international terrorism in an off, in a one-off basis and had never been a source of international terrorism. Now it will become one. And they don't even see that coming. They know only how to change avatars in their social network accounts, where when terrorist attacks happen in certain places, when they do that, they're not feeling sorry sincerely. They don't really know what it means to become a country where there is a powerful terroristic cell active. Those terroristic cells are already there, and they will continue to disrupt Europe more and more. And the Western Europe does no longer hold an immunity against that. There's no supremacy of law. There's no legality. There's no morals. Take religion. Religion would have holded that down. It's been trampled. It's been completely downsized and destroyed. People are demoralized. They cannot separate the good from the evil. And in the end, I'll give you a couple of quotes from some of the greatest wise men and philosophers. Nikolai Danilevsky used to write, "The humanity is diverse, and it consists of a whole range of culturally and historical types." When did he live? The Russians know it. I'll remind you. 1885. What is it, if not a multi-polarity bill born? He said, the terrorism brings a threat to the whole humanity because it neglects the multitude of cultures, de-Europeized. People lose the sense of patriotism. They start despising everything original and national. Which year did he say that? In 1920, 100 years ago. And how relevant it is now. Just look at the Ukraine that have forgotten its history, that has forgotten its heroes, and that had lost itself as a country, as a people, as a community. And finally, I'm going to give you the quote of Lev Gumilev. The idea of exclusivity is foreign to Russian people. Or let me quote Fyodor Dostoevsky here as well, which marked that if French have pride, the love towards something nice, the Spaniards have fairness, Germans have accuracy, Russians have the ability to accept and understand all other nations. Now, referring to the question that everybody has an absolute, a category of absolute, we also have it. But we have yet another quality and another feature. We respect the others in an absolute way. Thank you very much for listening.